You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hello, everyone. This is MLB.com Extras, American League Central Edition. I'm Anthony Kasterman. Thanks for tuning in. As we do each week, we'll be talking to all the beat writers in the AL Central about what's going on with their clubs. We're going to take more of a big-picture look here as we're at the midway point of the season, kind of reviewing the first half and previewing the second. So thanks for tuning in. Away we go. Talk about a Twins team that caught a lot of us off guard with a very strong first half. They are still hanging in there in the AL Central race with the Royals. And Rhett, I don't know, you had to be really optimistic to see the Twins making this kind of a surge. It's so hard in this game. You know, the building process often takes several years. Obviously, the last 4 years, this team has had 90-plus losses, and it's a big climb to get from there to above 500. How surprised are you by all this, and how excited must that team to be where it's at right now?
Yeah, it's definitely a surprise. I mean, this is a team, like you said, that had lost 90-plus games the last 4 years. Expectations coming in this year, they're going to be a little bit better than last year, but still probably pick to finish last in the division, and sure enough, hanging in there above 500, they're, you know, guaranteed at least 500 record past the halfway point. It's just one of those things where it's pretty impressive that they've been able to hang around with the Royals. The Tigers now are, you know, obviously been in third place, you know, for a couple months now, and Miguel Cabrera is out. So the Twins, the biggest thing for them has been their starting pitching. I mean, this is a team that finished last in the ERA the last couple of years from the starting pitchers. This year, you know, they're kind of, you know, they're top 10 most of the season. They got Urban Santana back now. So that's kind of the key. If they can kind of keep that going with the starting pitching and then have the hitting kind of catch up to it a little bit, that's kind of been the one disappointment, is the hitting really hasn't really lived up to the standards of last year. But last year, they're also kind of a second-half team with their offense. So if they can kind of get their offense going and keep it going with that pitching, it'd be a good combination the rest of the way. So far, it's been a big surprise. We'll see if we can keep it up, but it's definitely been impressive.
You mentioned Santana, of course, and, you know, he gets banged with that suspension just before opening day. It's kind of a kick to the gut collectively for that team. They obviously rallied around the rotation members that they had. He joins them and had a really, really encouraging start his first time back with versus the Royals. 2 runs on 3 hits over 8 innings pitched. What was the takeaway from that first start back? And because this is obviously a different situation. Not a guy coming back from an injury, so I guess you're maybe less concerned about him building up a tolerance. He did that in the minor leagues. What was the thoughts on that start?
Well, he was definitely really sharp. I mean, there was definitely no signs of rust. Like you said, he did get a chance to make 3 tune-up starts there in the minor leagues, but it's still always tough if you've been, you know, on a layoff of 6 months, or not 6 months, sorry, 3 months, to come back and to start in a major league game. And he came right back and looked great against the Royals. You know, 8 innings, gave him 2 runs, only 3 hits, and really probably could have went in the ninth. He only had, I think, like 92, 93 pitches. Mauder had said they thought that was enough for him in his first start, looking to protect him a little bit. But a big boost for this rotation if he can keep that up. So the rotation has been good as it is. And now at least they have some depth, some options for now. Trevor Mays, the bullpen, but that could change. They could look to maybe even deal one of their starters. Or, you know, if Pelfrey continues to struggle, maybe they switch him back to relief and put May in there. So at least they have the depth now with the rotation. And Irvin Santana is a big part of that. So, yeah, it's kind of like getting a guy back from a long injury. I mean, Mauder said that, you know, obviously some other people say it's like trading for, an ace at the deadline. But at the same time, it's really not because they knew he was coming, in a sense. He didn't make a trade. It's kind of a surprise. Whereas they knew Santana was coming back the whole time. It's kind of like almost like waiting for a guy to come back from an injury. But obviously he's healthy and looked really good in that first start, which is very encouraging for the Twins.
Yeah, you have to figure he has some motivation to prove himself. I mean, he's got the contract in hand, but there are a lot of whispers, well, that he, the means of earning that contract last year in Atlanta, of course, his time before that in Kansas City. So he's off to a great start, and the rotation, as you mentioned, has some depth now. The lineup has probably been the more frustrating aspect of this club, just because, you know, it did finish 7th in runs scored last season. And as you mentioned, Rhett, it was a second-half surge that allowed that to happen last year. What's it going to take to have a similar surge here this year?
Well, I think it's going to be one of those things where kind of like last year where you saw guys kind of unexpected, like Danny Santana and Kenny Vargas have, impressive impacts as rookies that kind of help carry that offense a little bit. I think the Twins are hoping for the same thing out of like Miguel Sano, who's been great so far since he's been called up. In, you know, his first 4 games, he's got hits in every game, hit a couple balls off the wall. And Byron Buxton at some point, he's out 4 to 6 weeks. But once he gets back, we hope that he gives you guys, gives the team a boost. That's kind of in Maurer right now, starting to swing a hot bat. So if Maurer can kind of have a strong second half, and guys like Dozier and Plouffe, who already in, and Hunter, guys that already had kind of strong first half, can keep building on that, you can see the offense maybe kind of turning the corner. But so far, it's been one of these things where it's kind of been up and down, starting off the year. They had a lot of, you know, success with runners in scoring position. That's kind of dried up a little bit. That's kind of been their big issue recently. But adding Sano is a big bat in that lineup, and if he can keep that up, that'd be huge. And sort of Buxton gets back, you know, after a couple weeks here, and he can kind of take over in center field, we can see this offense get a little bit better. So we'll see how it goes. But so far, he's right. It's kind of been a frustrating thing for the Twins, but at least the starting pitching's kind of been keeping them afloat.
And Buxton's been more of a slow starter at each level in the minors. Sano, and that played out in the big leagues, of course, before he got hurt. Sano, to come up and make the instant impact he has, what's been the key there, Rhett?
It's impressive, especially considering the fact that he's been DHing, too. It's something he's only done three times in the minors. If you talk to a lot of major leaguers, DHing isn't easy. You know, you're spending the time in between at-bats instead of, you know, being able to forget about your at-bats and being out there focusing the field. You got to figure out a routine in between. I don't know. And he's been kind of going into the cages, working in the cages in between at-bats, maybe looking at a little video and kind of hanging out in the dugout supporting his team. But he's just a guy that, you know, everyone talks about his power. It's obviously his biggest attribute, and he probably has just about as much power as anybody really in baseball. But the thing about him, too, in the minors was he has a, you know, pretty good sense of plate discipline, pitch recognition. He draws walks. The average probably won't be, you know, too high just because he does strike out a decent amount. But even running-wise, he's not quite, you know, obviously he's a huge guy, but you'd never say that he's slow. So, you know, his first hit was obviously an infield single, but just showing, you know, really good power. I mean, double off the wall to center field in Kansas City with a pitch that was, you know, a little bit outside, kind of off the end of the bat, he still was able to hit it over Lorenzo Cain's head. So the guy just has a good combination of, you know, obviously a lot of raw power, but to go along with it, he's not just some sort of free swinger. He's got a pretty good sense of the strike zone. So if he keeps this up, I mean, he's definitely going to be one of these maybe primary all-star guys that can provide power. We'll kind of see what they do with him defensively. There's obviously Trevor Plouffe there at third, and he's going to be the third baseman for now. But definitely a big bat to this lineup.
Definitely. And he's generated a lot of excitement, obviously, in the baseball community at large, but certainly there in Minnesota, as did Buxton when he came up. And really, Rhett, I mean, that's a big picture takeaway from this first half is, as we mentioned, here's a club that's coming off four really tough seasons. And that's a great fan base there in Minnesota. They support that club very well through thick and thin. But at the same time, you don't want to keep rolling off, 92 lost seasons and expect people to keep, you know, keep hope alive, basically. So, you know, with Paul Molitor coming aboard, I thought it was a big year for Terry Ryan, especially, to really reestablish this franchise as a winner, basically. And they've done that here in the first half.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if anything, they're kind of ahead of the curve. This team, you thought that maybe going into the season, like you said, they're going to be maybe a team that might finish last year, maybe improve a little bit on last year. But even with a rough second half, it's at least kind of built themselves up enough in the first half that, you know, worst case, they're going to have a, you know, much better record than expected, even if they kind of fall off a little bit. But if they keep it up, you know, with that starting pitching and their offense, you never know. Obviously, the second wild card, they could hang around there and be in contention. And even if they were to miss the postseason and be in contention, that would definitely be a success. This team coming off, you know, the four, you know, seasons of 90 plus losses. So if they can even be in contention and then build on it for next year when guys like Sano, guys like Buxton have more experience, you know, they'll still have a lot of those same starters. The only guy who's really a free agent in that mix is Mike Pelfrey. It's just a good season for them to be able to kind of build that bridge to being competitive. And right now they are competitive. So it's kind of ahead of the curve for them. A good start. And you're right, it's a big year for Terry Ryan and for the farm system. You can see some more guys come up as the year comes along, maybe guys like Jorge Polanco. We saw Alex Meyer up here, and he struggled, but he's still going to be a part of this team going forward. Whether it's going to be as a starter or as a reliever, it's kind of yet to be determined. But at least we're starting to see some of these young guys. I mean, Jose Berrios, maybe late in the year, but they have so much pitching, maybe not. But at least they kind of have some organizational depth and some top prospects who aren't even here yet, too. And the guys that are up here now, like Sano, are kind of getting a taste of it. So, definitely a good first half of them, and something to build on for sure in the future.
I am joined, as always, by Jason Beck, and we are looking back at the first half of the Tiger season and looking ahead to the second half. And a big key to both of those things is Miguel Cabrera, who, of course, is out for about 6 weeks with a calf injury, his first career trip to the disabled list. Huge blow, Beck. You know, this club was hovering around 500 as it is. Now you remove Miggy's bat from the lineup. what is it going to take to kind of hold down the fort and, for the next 40 games or so?
Well, it's hard to count on one guy to be able to make up for that type of loss. I think it's going to take a few things. I think first and foremost, they're going to have some, you know, continued production at JD Martinez. I don't know if he's going to stay really as hot as he's been for the last couple of weeks, but if he could for as long as possible, that'd be, you know, a huge dent in the gap that they've lost with Cabrera out. It would help balance out the lineup, certainly. Beyond that, they're going to have to pitch better. It's hard to be able to count on this offense to produce the type of runs they have and to hit as well as they have without Cabrera. But the fact that the pitching staff, I think they led the American League in runs allowed in June or summer, something like that. That couldn't have continued regardless. But now I think every extra run they give up becomes that much tougher for them to be able to you know, make up for. And beyond that, they're going to have to get a more balanced lineup and a more balanced offensive attack. And I think we saw some signs of that this weekend against Toronto. Now, granted, the Blue Jays pitching staff hasn't pitched all that well, but you saw Ian Kinsler come alive. You saw you know, the top of the order with Kinsler and Cespedes being able to serve as table setters. It would have been great if Cabrera had been batting third, but it created RBI opportunities for Victor Martinez, at least, and made it easier for him to be able to drive in some runs without necessarily hitting for a ton of power. And right. They're getting a little bit of offense there from the bottom half, and they benefited from Alex Avila coming back.
Yeah. You know, Victor coming back off the DL a couple weeks back, he's a big story for the first half. He's a big reason the offense wasn't as consistent as hoped. Now that he's been back a couple weeks, your thoughts on him from the left-hand side in particular and how he's looked and his readiness to help lead the charge there in the second half?
I think he's looked effective. I don't know if he has the power that people might have expected, but I think that was going to be a question anyways, just because last year was such an outlier for his career numbers. Even if he'd been perfectly healthy, I don't know if we would have count on him to be that slugger. I think what you count on him to do is come through an RBI situation to be able to hit for a high average. And so far, since he's come back from the DL, he's done that. And he's been able to get clutch hits. He really saved them against the against the White Sox last weekend. He's giving them a presence that they have to still respect, even with Miguel Cabrera not in there. He's kind of taken that leadership role again where, you know, it feels like a more complete team, even if Cabrera is out. I think Victor was that important, I guess, to the heart and the mindset of this ball club.
As we look ahead here, Beck, you mentioned the pitching. They have to pitch better. They have to pitch more consistently. And, you know, Verlander has had some – he's been knocked around a little bit since his return from the DL. You know, David Price has been terrific. Alfredo Simon has been terrific on measure, a little more struggled here a little more lately before the break. But just in general, your thoughts on that rotation and the possibility of them doing something to upgrade it between now and July 31st?
I think they can live with less than quality outings. I think what really hamstrings them, especially now with the bullpen the way it is when the starters can't pitch deep into games. Guys getting knocked down the third or fourth innings, they can't afford that right now because what it does is it forces them to use guys who they would prefer to use in later inning situations in longer roles. You know, Alex Wilson came up to fill that long relief spot. He's now basically a setup guy with Jabba Chamberlain gone, but he's still one of the few guys who you can stretch out to 40 or 50 pitches in an outing. If you've got to use him in that role, that's one fewer opportunity for you to give him to protect the lead in seventh inning. Same goes for Blaine Hardy, and that's even more of a premium now because with Tom Gorzolani gone, he's the primary left-hander. It's him and Ian Kroll right now. So when you look at a bullpen that doesn't have any set roles aside from closer Joaquin Soria, the more guys you need to fill innings because the starters can't even get you into the sixth, I think the more and more questionable that bullpen becomes and the more you wonder how they can keep it going. And I think just getting six innings of four-run ball from some of these guys would be big. You know, it's not ideal, especially without Miguel Cabrera to plug them back into it. But right now, they've got to get innings. And it's been too inconsistent for them as far as deep starts followed by third-inning exits. No, really, almost all around, with the exception of Price and Sanchez lately.
Beck, is there any scenario where the Tigers are sellers at the deadline with Price and with Cespedes nearing free agency? I mean, this franchise has been nothing but aggressive and go for it, and I'd imagine that's the mentality as of today for sure. But do you think in your mind there would be any chance that things would take that bad of a turn for the worse?
I think they would absolutely have to go in the tank in July for that to happen. I think if they're anywhere within earshot of the division or wild card races. Yeah, with a lot of franchises, the way things are trending, I think it would be, you know, fair speculation, and I think you'd really keep an eye on it. But this team was built under the ownership mandate to win now.
Yeah.
And the idea of reloading and coming back at it in 2 years, that doesn't work for Mike Ilitch.
Right.
We don't know what his situation is going to be in 2 years. I think, you know, especially when you add in the fact that Dombrowski's in the last contract, you know, I think everything points to them giving every shot to win right now and then sorting out everything later. You know, if anything, I'd almost be surprised if they didn't, you know, go all in and buy under the idea that they can try to sign some of the guys they acquire long term, give them a taste of Detroit, and it, you know, try to at least salvage something next year to keep everything from going into a serious question.
Yeah, how is the combination of? Listen, they've been playing below 500 for 2 months now, and you combine that with the Cabrera injury. How do you compare this clubhouse, I guess, this mindset compared to previous years? Is there any more frustration there? I mean, they've been in third place for a while, or is there still the general expectation that, you know, this club is a first-place kind of club and it's going to become that?
Frustrations to last year. I think in that sense, this team might miss Torii Hunter, you know, not just on the field, but off the field with his presence in the clubhouse and his ability to keep guys loose and relaxed yet focused. There's not really that type of guy in that clubhouse right now. They really have to find it within themselves. Victor is more of an intense leader. You know that. You watched him for 2 years. Torii was kind of counterbalanced there. They don't have that counterbalance right now. But I think there is some frustration there. I think it's been tempered a little bit with their performance of late. And I think there's still, you know, still some pretty good level of confidence right now that, you know, from these guys that it's still relatively early and they can get back in it. What you hear in the wake of Miguel Cabrera's injury kind of varies depending on who you talk to. Some guys say that, you know, it's going to take a team effort to you know, make up the gap, that it's doable. Other guys, I think Alex Avila might have put it best, which you just say that you try to keep your head above water until you get him back and then count on a late-season surge once you do get him, hopefully fully healthy, and then be able to benefit from that.
All right, it'll be interesting to see if the Tigers can make a run in the second half and then reclaim their top spot in the Central. Jason Beck is all over it for MLB.com. Today we're looking at a strong first half for the Royals, building off of last year's October success and looking ahead to what they hope is another exciting second half in Kansas City. And Jeffrey, you know, we say it all the time, it's so hard to repeat in this game because you kind of wear your arms out and for that matter, wear your bodies out your even your position player bodies with a deep October run like the Royals had. But to sustain that momentum from that run and to keep that fan base so engaged as we saw in the All-Star vote and the TV ratings and all that, it's just been a great season so far in Kansas City.
Yeah, it really has, and I think it's probably more impressive what they've done in the first half here than maybe the second half last year, just because of all the adversity that they've had to go through with suspensions and all the injuries to the rotation, injuries on the field, bereavements, the fighting early on, some offensive struggles lately, and they still managed to stay 13 games over 500 and they're 4.5 games up in the Central. So pretty impressive just the character that they've shown in the first half so far. And several players told me yesterday that they don't even think they're even close to playing their best baseball yet. So that's even more impressive that they feel that way. And here they are 13 games over 500.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of look at this team in three segments. You got the cornerstone guys. You got the guys they made their big offseason moves with. And then you've got the kind of surprise guys. We're kind of looking at those in third here. First, the cornerstone guys. I mean, we said going into the year, it's so key for them. Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer building off what they showed last October. Obviously, neither one had an extraordinary regular season last year. Moustakas especially got sent down to AAA last year.
Yeah.
So both those guys to get off to strong starts, maybe not all-star starts, depending on how you evaluate defense or how much you value defense, but certainly very strong cornerstone guys for them this year.
Yeah, we talked about that back in spring, I remember, and how important those two guys would be, and they have not disappointed. Both of them are having just excellent years, and, yeah, maybe marginally all-star-ish type of years, but in the field, at the plate, they have not disappointed. They've really come through and have made the jump that I think Dayton Moore and his staff hoped that they would make, It's really helped them. I mean, I can't imagine where they would be without Moose hitting in the number two spot and hitting, around 300. And Haas has been a streaky guy. He got the game-winning hit yesterday, but I think they expect even bigger things from him in the second half.
And then as far as the offseason goes, it wasn't an easy offseason to love or rave about. It took some projection. It took some belief in the if come, so to speak. I mean, Addison Volquez had a great year for the Pirates last year, but I think there was definitely a wonder if he could repeat that here in 2015.
Right.
Kendrick Morales, obviously a brutal year last year, didn't even sign with the Twins until June and then had a rough go with them and with the Mariners. And then, of course, Alex Rios is trying to bounce back from one of the worst years of his career. Now, Rios, of course, had the hand injury early and has struggled to produce since he's come back, but geez, you take two out of three the way Volquez has pitched for them and the way Morales has pitched for them. It's been huge.
Well, and definitely throw Chris Young into that bunch and maybe Joe Blanton, and they still got Chris Medlin down. He had a terrific rehab start the other day. It's pretty rare, that you hit every one when you're trying gambling on free agency, and Dayton Moore and his staff really have hit on every one. The only if right now is Alex Rios, and, if you could turn back the clock and see what would have happened if he had not been hit in the hand back in Minnesota in April, he was off to a fantastic start. He was hitting over 300. He was really raking the ball. And then all of a sudden he gets hit, broken hand, has not looked the same since. It just has not been able to generate any power. Now, in batting practice, he's blasting balls all over the place. But in the game, when it counts, he's not been able to drive the ball, and I wonder how much of that hand healing has to do with that. So, but yeah, the other guys, Kendrick Morales, terrific signing, Chris Young, Volquez, they just have hit on every one. And as you mentioned in the offseason, they didn't exactly get rave reviews, but as it turns out, they kind of knew what they were doing.
Yeah, and then you kind of touched on where I was going next with the surprise guys. I mean, Chris Young, a guy who nobody was going to touch on a big league contract. We'll see how Medlin develops, but Ryan Madsen, the comeback he's had. I mean, these were, they weren't risky signings because the investment wasn't there, but they were. It took some scouting and some belief more than anything.
Yeah, and when you're a small market team, that's really what you have to do. You can't go out and get the $100 million player. You have to make these kind of moves and hope that maybe 60 or 70% of them work out. And so far, they're almost at 100%, which is crazy good. I mean, it's just it's the tip of the hat to their scouting department for taking a chance on Ryan Madsen and a Blanton and Chris Young, like you mentioned. He's sitting there at the beginning of spring training, and no one would touch him. And I have no idea why, because he's just been terrific. And it has a great clubhouse presence, too. And I bet a lot of scouts and a lot of GMs are kicking themselves right now for not jumping on Chris Young.
Jeffrey, how aggressive do you expect the Royals to be when we, maybe even before the All-Star break, but especially when we come out of the All-Star break, when it comes to the trade deadline? We know they've dealt with some injuries in the rotation, and that's probably the one area where they could really stand to make an upgrade. But, of course, it is a seller's market, and it's going to take some really aggressive offers from the farm systems to get even a short-term rental. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, Dayton has never made a big, splashy trade during the season. He and his staff really believe that you do your hardest work in the off season, and they did that. Once in a while, they'll get a small part, like a couple of years ago, Justin Maxwell last year, before the deadline, I think they got the Jason Frazier, and then afterwards they got Josh Willingham in September. Just kind of little spring moves. They're not really big on the big flashy moves. And as a matter of fact, you mentioned the rotation, as jumbled up as it is now with the injuries and everything like that, when they're fully healthy, they're going to have eight starters. So they're going to be on the other end of it. They might be selling one or two of their starters. They just won't have enough spots, because it's really hard to imagine Chris Young coming out of the rotation. You've got Jason Vargas coming back in, Yordano coming back in. And, you know, obviously Blanton can be a guy that will either be traded or DFA'd to make room. But you've got too many starting pitchers for a five-man rotation. So, you know, maybe Jared McGuthrie, whose contract is over at the end of this season, could be bought out. Maybe he gets dealt. But they just don't have enough space for the rotation if they're healthy and if Chris Medlin continues his terrific comeback. So it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out. I don't think they're going to go out and necessarily get another starting pitcher. Matter of fact, I think they're going to go the other direction. I think they're going to have to move somebody.
Interesting, yeah. Well, they've definitely accrued some depth there when it's healthy. And speaking of depth, the bullpen, we said it going into the year, that this could be a better bullpen than last year, just because it could be a deeper bullpen. At the same time, you know, you wondered how much regression there might be from the guys they relied on so heavily last year. Well, you know, the regression monster hasn't bit them too hard just yet, and the depth is there. For my money, it is a better bullpen than last year. What do you think, Jeffrey?
Yeah, it's way deeper now. I mean, Franklin Morales has been terrific, too. And we forgot about mentioning him as another free agent signing that they hit a home run with. You know, Wade Davis has given up one run this year. That's just ridiculous. There's no way we thought he could improve upon last year, but he's done even better. Greg Holland has had a couple of issues, a couple little hiccups along the way, but lately he's been throwing fire again. He's up around 94, 95. He's kind of added a curveball to his repertoire, and that's helped. Calvin Guerrero has been as good as he was last year. Madsen now gives them actually a sixth-inning guy, or a guy that can go in the final three innings if one of the other guys needs rest. You got Morales. They hardly ever use Frazier anymore. He was kind of a key player down the stretch last year, but haven't really needed to go to Luke Ochaver yet, who can also another guy who throws in the mid to upper 90s, and he could be a factor down the stretch too. So yeah, they're seven deep there, and right now they're carrying Brandon Finnegan too, who's pitched better in recent weeks. So yeah, there's plenty of depth there. I agree. I think that is, I guess, many times. I think it's the best bullpen in baseball, and it's even gotten better.
What do you think is the biggest question facing this team as we go into the second half? Is it a simple matter of? I don't think anybody questions their resilience at this point.
No.
The run they made last year. Is there one area that is the biggest question mark?
Yeah, what we've seen in the last month or so is the offense being a little spotty and inconsistent. They had really had a tough week, and some of it was going up against some really good pitching with Houston, with Oakland. The Twins came in here. Kyle Gibson threw a great game, but he doesn't need more production at the bottom of the order. Now, looking around baseball, it's not like, you know, everybody has a 350 hitter hitting eighth or ninth, but you still need a little bit more out of Rios and
actually a lot more out of Rios, and more out of Infante, too. Those 8th spot, 9th spot in the order is in kind of a black hole right now, and that's got to improve. They're going to need – Infante has picked it up lately. He's using more line drives. He's just not – his OPS is awful, and his slugging percentage is awful. He's getting more singles, which is encouraging. I think he's getting his confidence up. But they're getting they got one homer out of that spot. Rios has one, and Infante has zero. They would just like I think when the season began, they envisioned this would be a lineup that would be, you know, really tough 1 through 9. And right now it's pretty tough 1 through 7. And they just need those last two guys to really pick it up.
Absolutely. And that will be key for them going to the second half, trying to hold on to this AL Central lead coming out of the All-Star break. And, boy, Jeffrey, who would have thought that the All-Star game we'd be disappointed that the Royals only have 4 starters yeah. elected in? That's a come down from 8, but still, 4 is pretty good given some past years for Kansas City's representation at that showcase.
Yeah, it's the most they've ever had, obviously. And I was really kind of, privately rooting for all 8 just for the spectacle of it. I just think that would have been absolutely hilarious to see them all show up at the starting line. I mean, just see the Kansas City Royals versus the NL All-Stars. But, yeah, 4 is a pretty good number. And you really can't argue against any of the 4. Make a strong case against any of the 4 that are in there. So as Ned said yesterday, the voting all kind of evened out, and the fans pretty much picked the right guys. Obviously there's probably going to be a few complaints, but for the most part, everybody that got in is pretty deserving, and that includes the 4 Royals. So and later today, we're taping this now, we'll find out what reserves for that Ned will take. I guess obviously one of them will be Wade Davis, and I wouldn't be shocked if he also took someone like Haas or Moose or Morales or something like that, somebody like that, and maybe even a Chris Young, who he's 7-3 with a 2.6 something ERA. I don't think there's a whole lot of starters that have been better than that this year in the American League, so it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I am pleased to be joined by my good buddy Jim Rosenhaus of the Indians Radio Network, pinch hitting for Jordan Bastion this week. Rosie, we are so glad to have you once again. And this week, kind of looking at things from the big picture standpoint, and the Indians, of course, a certain magazine, Sports Illustrated, had them on a regional cover and picked them to win the World Series. Things got off to that. That made some people uncomfortable in the Cleveland area with the sporting history here. Things got off to a rough start. Obviously, the Indians have played a little bit better here before the break. In your mind, what is the overall, the big key to this club making a second-half surge and living up to that prediction?
Well, they'll have to get continued, not just good starting pitching, but outstanding starting pitching. And we saw that. You can't expect what they did in the Tampa Bay series last week to continue, but I think we saw in the second half of last year that when that starting rotation gets on a roll, they can take this team a long way. And then it takes a little bit of the pressure off of the offense. They've struggled to score runs consistently. They've had some stretches where it's worked out okay, but they just haven't been able to put together long stretches of good, consistent offense, and that's really hurt them. So the starting pitching is going to carry this club, and we'll see if they can get on the kind of roll that they did in the second half a season ago.
I'd say on measure, the starting pitching has been as advertised. Now, of course, it depends on how realistic your thoughts were going into the year. If you thought Carlos Carrasco and Corey Kluber are going to be 1 and 2 in the Cy Young vote in no particular order, that hasn't come true. But, those guys have been terrific overall. Trevor Bauer has really made a lot of strides. He hasn't pitched as well at home as on the road for whatever reason, but he's certainly becoming the pitcher they envision. And the rotation's all the more deep now that Cody Anderson's really stepped into that fifth slot and pitched so well.
And, Anthony, too, I think the thing is that if you look at in terms of experience and how that can come into play, Kluber was the only pitcher heading into the season who had worked a full season in a starting rotation, and that was a Cy Young Award-winning year last year. So, you're asking some younger major league starters, and not only age-wise but experience-wise, okay, go ahead and go log 200 innings and be outstanding every time out. That's hard to do at this stage of their careers. But We've seen flashes of that, and I think overall you would take the starting pitching that the Indians have had. It's been solid, and they had a little trouble filling that fifth spot early in the season, but now Anderson has just come on and been a real nice surprise for them in his three major league starts. So the earmarks are there for something very good, and I really think Mickey Callaway said this back in April. He said, for whatever reason, our starters the last 2 years, this was heading into this season, have been better in the second half. They've gotten better as the season has gone along each season. So I think that's what they're banking on, and then we'll see if they can get that rolling again.
Offensively, you kind of shudder to think where this club would be without Jason Kipnis' contributions here this year. It's been a remarkable turnaround from last year where, of course, he was hurt and that messed with his swing and his numbers overall. And not only that, Rosie, but it's also a remarkable turnaround from April. You know, he didn't play particularly well in April. And, boy, May, June, and now July, he's obviously whipped himself into all-star shape and put up some of the best numbers in the league at any position, let alone second base.
It's been fun to watch. And, you know, you mentioned April, but I think in spring training – and then that first month of the year, you saw the good signs. Not necessarily numbers-wise in the month of April, but he was driving the ball the other way. And when Jason Kipnis is going well, he's hitting the ball hard to left, center, and left with a lot of power. And you saw that early in the season, that to some extent was hitting in some hard luck and that type of thing. But the line drives were there, and the good plate appearances were there. And now these last 2 months have been just absolutely tremendous. And he's played some pretty good defense, too. Just a different guy coming into the season. It's funny, you look back at his offseason, and so many players take swings in cages for a good portion of their offseason and are hitting the ball a lot before they even get to spring training. He couldn't do that this year because he had the finger injury when he dropped some weights on it back in December, and he really couldn't swing a bat much until he got out to Goodyear. And I'm going to say that helped him. I think sometimes it just allowed him to focus on his body, getting himself completely healthy and ready to go for a new season. And it really seems to have paid off.
Sometimes less is more. And that's what you do in the winter too, Rosie, right? You focus on your body.
Absolutely. I mean, it definitely shows when you get to spring training.
Totally. For the obviously, they made what maybe you could project to be the big internal shakeup that they could make going into the year. And by that, I mean they shook up the left side of the infield with Francisco Lindor and Giovanni Urshela. What have been your thoughts on those guys now? It's been basically a month of having both those guys up in the big leagues. What's been your takeaway of the impact on that, on the club, and kind of how that projects going forward here in the second half?
Extremely positive. Both have been rock solid defensively. Urshela at third base has been just tremendous defensively, and they're holding their own at the plate. I mean, these are young major leaguers, and they're doing okay at the plate. They've come up with some key base hits. And the other thing that they've done, especially Lindor, he brings an enthusiasm and a joy for the game that I don't know if it rubs off on his teammates, but they seem to like having him around, and that's been kind of fun. And you know, he'll make a play, whether it's a mistake or a good play, and he's got a big smile on his face, and he just he brings a certain joy to the game that's fun to watch. And I would imagine as a teammate, it's fun to be around. And actually, Jason Kipnis talked about it the other night. He said it's fun watching the two kids just off to the other side of the infield from him really get after it in their first major league season. And they both have been quality additions for what they're doing performance-wise, but I think also other things that they bring to the table.
That's a great point. Yeah, Lindor definitely has some swagger to him, and you need a little of that in your clubhouse for sure. As we look ahead here, Rosie, what I'd imagine it would involve somebody in the lineup, just being that offense has been the more inconsistent area for them. Who in your mind is the big X factor here in the second half?
I think without question, Carlos Santana. He's had a disappointing season that's been getting worse as it's been going along. He's been hitting about .160 for almost a month now. So, he draws his walks, but he's in a spot in that lineup, the fourth and fifth spot in the lineup, where they need him to drive in runs, and he's not doing it. And it's killing this offense. And he needs to be the Santana that we've seen in the past. Last year, it got off to a slow start, but from the end of May on, he was a proven run producer in that lineup, and he has been in the past. And that's why, you know, the Indians want to be as patient as they possibly can with him, but it's becoming more and more frustrating by the day, because it just seems that there have been so many opportunities for the Indians to score some more runs, whether it's to pad a lead or get back in a game, and he'll come up in a key spot, and he just hasn't been able to come through. And it's been a real mystery for Terry Francona, for Ty Van Berkley, the hitting coach. They just can't put their finger on why he's been unable to catch fire like his track record would suggest. That's, I think, the frustrating thing is the talent's in there. We've seen it, and the track record is there, but it just hasn't come together this season.
Yeah. You know, one thing with the Indians, Rosie, we're talking so much about the trade deadline now in Major League Baseball with that coming up, and there are teams that are going to have to make those hard-line decisions, buyer or seller, and some in between. For the Indians, it seems somewhat clear-cut to me in that you know, there's no one obvious spot, and you're not going to trade for somebody to replace Carlos Santana, basically. You know, he might be the weak link in the lineup right now, but it's not like you're going to add somebody to replace him. You're not going to really sell because, you know, who would you sell off when it comes to pending free agents? It's you're not going to trade away Mike Aviles. Maybe David Murphy, you know, if Nick Swisher is healthy in particular, but even then, I mean, would the return be great enough to cash in there? So I guess what I'm saying is, the front office is almost in a really good spot in that, you know, kind of standing pat just seems kind of the obvious move here, basically, and let it ride and see if this club has it in it from within to make that run. What are your thoughts on all that?
I tend to agree with you because, you know, if they're in a position where they really stumble into the trade deadline and it just doesn't look like it's a situation where they can get out of it, I'm not exactly sure. They're not going to trade away their young pitching. There's no way they're going to do that. And you know, their key position players are under contract for a while. So it is kind of a tricky spot if they do end up being sellers. Now, if they're buyers, you know, what do they want to give up to try and get something back, whether it be some sort of impact bat, if that's indeed out there, with so many teams looking for the same thing. But also, you know, I think they'd like to have a little depth in terms of pitching, whether it's bullpen or rotation. Because when you look down below, Anderson has been a great surprise, but past him, I don't know that there's much ready to go here at the major league level. They could turn back to Sean Markham again. He's still at AAA, and he did give them a couple of strong starts when he did come up, but that's about it in terms of major league ready starting pitching. So I think starting pitching depth and then an impact bat, if they are indeed buyers at the trade deadline, is something they'd look for. But again, what do you give up to try and get that?
Absolutely. All right. Well, we'll see if the Tribe can make a run in the second half and prove certain publications correct. And we're going to let Jim Rosenhaus get back to working on his body. I am joined, as always, by the fabulous Scott Merkin. Merk, we are basically at the midway point. All-Star game next week in Cincinnati. And the White Sox will definitely be one of the more intriguing teams when we come out of the break, just from the trade deadline standpoint, whether they stay on track or you know, become one of those teams that are sellers. So just kind of in your big picture view of this club, you know, things were looking really bad, and they win a few in a row, and people kind of get their hopes up. What's kind of your overall state of the White Sox here at the midway mark?
You know, pretty much what you said, good and bad and hard to figure. I mean, you know, there's one point this year where they swept the Astros, who have been, you know, one of the great success stories in the first half at home. They moved to 28-30, and everyone's like, all right, here it is. This is what everyone's been waiting for. This is the team they imagine. And they lost 8 in a row. And that was a streak that really put them deep in the hole. Because as you know, once you start getting 10 games under, you got to kind of fight just to get back to .500 at that point. And you really can't do anything in this league unless you're, you know, starting from a base of .500. No matter how much parity there is in baseball, the team that makes the playoffs will be over .500, whether it's 83-79 or 93-69. You're going to be over .500. So you put them in a hole, and then, you know, they played a little bit better with the two wins in St. Louis, the two wins over Baltimore, both viable playoff contenders. St. Louis, the best team by record in baseball. And then, you know, I had a tough loss in the series finale against Baltimore. But it's still hard to figure. You just don't know. I mean, you see signs, and then you still wonder. They don't catch the ball consistently enough. They don't hit consistently enough. Even when they were winning close games, low-scoring games. You know, they beat St. Louis 7-1 in one game, but I think they scored five of those runs in the ninth inning. So, you know, it doesn't look like a team that's going to ultimately be right there in contention. But then again, you know, no team in the AL is more than 6.5 games out of a playoff spot right now. So it's very confounding. And one thing to remember, and Kenny Williams said this in a recent article to USA Today, but they've talked about this a number of times, is, you know, they always have this three-year plan. They've been talking about for years, as long as I've been covering them, the three-year board where they have things mapped out. So I don't foresee a gutting of this group and a rebuild, partially because I don't know if they can get what they wanted by trading away everyone, you know, trading away, you know, a lot of guys. But I do see, you know, some moves that may help the team now, but more so help the team in the future to continue building that strong base.
Would Jeff Samardzija be involved in any of those moves? What's your gut feeling on him between now and August 1st? Is he a White Sox on August 1st, do you think? I know this can change by the day, but what are your thoughts right now?
I would think he'd be the most likely of the group to go because, you know, he had some, you know, a slow start, but he's been really good the last 10 starts. I think he's gone at least 7 innings in 9 of those 10 starts, and I believe 7 of the 10 starts have been quality starts. So, you know, he's a guy that really will help a contending team. There's no doubt about it. I don't care what his overall numbers say from the first half. Absolutely will help a contending team. So I would see him as a main candidate, and that may be, well, I mean, obviously if they, you know, run off a 6-1 stretch into the break and then come out and play great baseball too, you may see a different story. But if they continue this kind of, you know, win 4, lose 3, you know, 6-4, 5-5 stretches, I would think Samardzija is the most likely of the group to go because of the fact that you can get Sutton for him this year and, you know, it isn't ruled out that he would come back next year as free agent. So, I mean, I would think he's going to have a lot of interest. There's no question. You can see by the scouts there on his starting days that he's going to have a lot of interest. And I would think he's, you know, he'd probably get their best return of reasonable guys they would trade away.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because those short-term rentals sometimes are not even worth your while. Sometimes you are better off recouping the draft pick if they do sign elsewhere. But, and this could change too, but as of now, as we get close in on the All-Star break, it's such an extreme seller's market that a guy like Samardzija, it could be overwhelming return for that short period of time.
But the Sox made a team like Oakland last year. And again, you can't really fault Billy Bean because, you know, they were going for it. And there are some people, and I'm sure you heard the same thing, that kind of believe that if Oakland had held on, they might have been the same story that Kansas City was. They might have been,
right.
We talked about this on the podcast, they might have been the team going to the World Series last year. So, you know, they gave up two really good prospects for the Cubs, and Addison Russell and Billy McKinney, and Addison Russell is playing every day, and while not hitting a lot right now, playing great defense at second base for the Cubs. And I think the Sox, if they do end up moving Samardzija, need the same kind of team like that, that needs a piece like Samardzija. Not necessarily to be your number one guy in the rotation, because they went out and got Lester, too, last year, but someone who can, you know, fill in the rotation and make it a really strong group and really make it strong when they get to the postseason as well.
Well, I always root for weird things, Merck, so I'm rooting for them to trade him to the Cubs for Billy McKinney and just to make that just have those guys trade teams with each other both summers in a row. But no, overall now with the White Sox, obviously the offense just has not taken off at all this season like a lot of us thought. Only 3 guys with OPS plus marks above the league average, and one of those, Avisiel Garcia, is right around league average. Adam LaRoche a bit better, and Jose Abreu, of course. But let's focus in on Abreu there. Obviously, you know, they made him the focal point of their offseason, building that lineup around him. And he's had a strong year, no doubt. It's not quite the scorching season he had last year. And I think that some of that probably plays into protection because he hasn't been as well protected as advertised, Melky Cabrera and LaRoche. What have been your thoughts on Abreu's season here, Merck?
You know, I shared a cab ride with a scout the other day. This sounds like a long story I'm going to break into. But he was saying to me that he doesn't understand how any team would ever pitch to Abreu because Abreu is the main weapon in that lineup right now. He said, you know,
exactly.
If you're him, you'd pitch around him every single time. But I think that's part of the issue. But I also think that part of the issue is that the league knows him better, and he understands this. Trust me, this guy is as smart a hitter as you're going to find. And, you know, I talked to him. MLB Network had, in their game day stats, had put a stat out about how he's swinging at less first pitches this year. And I talked to him about that in St. Louis, and he said it's true because, you know, last year it kind of behooved him to swing early like that. Now he feels like he's in a better place where he's knowing the league and can work a pitcher a little bit more. So, yeah, I think part, like you said, part of it is the rest of the lineup has not, you know, let's face it, aside from Abreu, no one has been, obviously he's had a pretty good year overall. He's had some moments where he's been down a little bit, but I think Abreu is really the only guy who's been consistent from start to finish in that lineup offensively this year. So, yeah, part of it is you identify the guy who beats, just like when Robin Ventura walked Cabrera with guys on first and second, you know, and taking the chance. You identify the main guy who's going to beat you in a game and work around him. But also it's about, you know, hey, this guy's pretty darn good. Let's really work on what we need to get this guy out. And, you know, we know a little bit more about him now. We've seen him for a year and some change. So let's go after him. But, yeah, it's hard to argue with Abreu here. I mean, I think he's at the wrong position probably to make the All-Star team. Maybe he'd be a final vote candidate, but he's in a stacked first base spot. But you can't complain about what Jose Abreu has done for the team so far.
No, you can't. And again, yeah, it's the lineup as a whole. It's just struggling to get going to the top of the order, middle of the order, bottom of the order, you name it. The other guy I want to key in on here, Merck, since this is more of a big picture podcast this week, if you would, Carlos Rodon. We're about 9 or 10 starts into Rodon's career. What has been your takeaway from what you've seen so far?
Outstanding slider. You know, the makeup that they talked about, he's got it. He's not afraid of anything out there. You know, still working on, I think, fastball command, just command overall. You know, he's getting 3-4 walks pretty much every time out there. You know, a couple times he's been below that. But I don't think there's anyone in the organization and the scouts I've talked to who think that this kid is going to be anything less than a frontline starter. It's just a question of when that develops. You know, I mean, it's his first year. He got kind of thrust in the rotation after coming up from the bullpen, which is where he wants to be, which is where he should be. So he's kind of learning as he goes. You know, I don't think you can really base anything on the fact that, aside from the fact that he's got great raw stuff, a great makeup, and he's learning. You know, every start he learns a little bit more, and he said that basically flat out. So I like what I've seen from him. Yeah, I think command is something that counts, unless you're like, you know, just off the charts, ridiculously advanced when you get there. And he did have, you know, 3 years at college ball at NC State. That's going to be developed. That's you know, probably the last thing that comes for a young pitcher. And when he gets that, it's going to be a pretty darn formidable 1-2 punch with, you know, Sale, and throw the third punch in there with Jose Quintana as well. And these are of the guys that, you know, they have under control for the next 3 years. So,
right.
You know, starting rotation and even bullpen, they're pretty well set. They just need other things to kind of fill in around them.
Absolutely. And obviously they need some runs for those starters because, yeah, they have the starting talent to go on a run and to roll off, you know, those 8 out of 10 type stretches it's going to take to start to gain some ground here in the Central. But, you know, maybe the runs just aren't going to come from this year. But, Merck, I guess the other big picture takeaway from the first half that's been frustrating for them was just the defense. Defense ranks last in the American League in defensive runs saved. And, you know, I don't think we expect them to have a great defense, but, you know, that's certainly been a bigger issue than we thought going into the year.
Well, I think kind of emblematic of the whole season is Alexi Ramirez over at shortstop because
Absolutely. Alexi
last year, well, and you're exactly right. I mean, the defense has not been good. And Alexi last year won the Silver Slugger for shortstop and was the final three for the Gold Glove Award. And he's, you know, no offense to Alexi, but he's not near either one this year. He's just not having a good season. And it's kind of hard to figure. You know, they tried to adjust on the fly. They felt like Carlos Sanchez a little more advanced than Micah Johnson defensively at second base, so they've gone with Carlos to kind of back up this great pitching staff, even though Micah's a better offensive player. And he's played pretty well overall over there at second base, but it has just not been a good group defensively. It's an easy thing to point at Robin Ventura and the staff and say, well, it's their fault they're not playing well, but for the most part, aside from, you know, some guys who are young and developing like a Carlos Sanchez or even Connor Gillespie doesn't have a ton of experience in the major leagues. These are guys who have played for a while. It's not Robin Ventura's responsibility to, you know, to make Alexi Ramirez play well this year. Alexi's been here since 2000, you know, been playing Major League Baseball since 2008. So it's not like he needs to be developed at shortstop. There's just something not going right with him this year. And, you know, it's been a perfect storm of not good for them, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Aside from the pitching, you know, I mean, they play. It's funny, they play a lot of close games. And that's because they have good pitching and no offense. And a lot of you know, people look at them and say they have the starting pitcher that if they got into the playoffs, it'd be a good team, it'd be a tough team to face. And they've played a lot of these close games, but the problem is they don't catch the ball consistently enough. So again, there's still some time to make changes. They have a lot of home games coming up. They started with this Baltimore series, 16 straight games in Chicago. But, you know, if they don't change soon, there's going to be some changes, you know, not necessarily wholesale, but changes, kind of acknowledging that they're going in a different, slightly different direction this year than what they thought.
Yeah. All right, Mark, so in your heart of hearts, what happens first, the next Eagles concert at the United Center or the next postseason game at U.S. Cellular?
Well, based on the Eagles' touring schedule, this is no offense to the White Sox, because it just doesn't look like they're going to be a playoff team this year. I'm going to go with the Eagles at the United Center. Let's hope it.
All right.
Let's hope the Eagles come. Hey, who knows, maybe the Eagles do a surprise show in August, and then it's kind of a trick question there.
That is a trick question. I knew you'd be adept with the Eagles' touring schedule more than I am, Mark. All right, everyone, that's a wrap. This has been MLB.com Extras, American League Central Edition.